Hello and welcome to The Logistics Tribe. I'm Boris Vergendreer, founder of The Logistics Tribe, and I'm excited to present to you an episode that is hosted by Dana von der Heide. Her guest on the program today is Davide Costella. Davide is responsible for the design and execution of the last mile delivery strategy of Nespresso. And in the world of premium portioned coffee delivered right to end consumers' houses, making the customer happy with a flawless last mile delivery is a big thing. So Nespresso pays a great deal of attention to this, and Davide is right in the middle of it. So please sit back, prepare yourself a nice beverage of your choice, just like I'm doing right now, and enjoy this Logistics Tribe podcast episode with Dana von der Heide and Davide Costella.
All right, Davide, I'm very excited to have you today in the Logistics Tribe, our podcast recording, which we are now doing on a weekly basis. Couldn't be more excited to have you on board, a seasoned logistics professional with great experience when it comes to e-commerce and retail overall. Davide, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Dana. Thank you for having me.
For everyone that doesn't know Davide yet, he's a global delivery service manager for Nespresso. He had a lot of exciting previous roles as well, but I think for today we are very keen to learn more on the logistics projects at Nespresso, also get some insights on what's happening in times of COVID, maybe also how Nespresso is tackling these. We are also very keen to learn a little bit more on how you're partnering with logistics solutions providers. I think there's a lot of innovation that you're driving. And then another very interesting fact about Davide is that he's also a coach. So maybe towards the end of the podcast, he gives us a few hints and maybe some learnings from his coaching experience that can help all of us in our career in the logistics industry. Davide, let's get started. And I'd love to get a quick introduction from yourself about your role at Nespresso and maybe quickly about you personally as well.
Yeah, sure. So again, thank you for having me, Dana, and hello, everyone. So in Nespresso, I'm the Global Delivery Service Manager. And what it means, I'm really responsible to design the last mile strategy for Nespresso globally, as well as to lead the execution of this strategy. And I've been in the position for a couple of years now. And yes, based out of our headquarters in Lausanne. And about myself, I think I'm a very curious person. I love self-development. And I find pleasure in having good talks with people. I'm originally Italian, 36 years old, and love reading, doing sports, and been based in Lausanne for 6-7 years now.
And I also heard you love skiing, right? Which is the perfect time of the year now. So after
like
the podcast,
yeah,
we let Davide do a little skiing trip as well. All right. So cool to kind of, I've been following you for a while. We've been working together as part of Parcel Perform. But I think one thing that I really observed is there's lots of projects, lots of innovations that Nespresso is driving. Before we go into the details, maybe for our listeners as well, when we talk about last mile, maybe you can tell us a little bit on what's the setup that Nespresso is usually operating in.
Yeah, so operating last mile basically, it's for us, really anything that leaves distribution center, warehouse within the market, and from there it goes to final customers. So the way Nespresso works, we have three manufacturing centers, big one all in Switzerland, and then from there basically we ship final product to all countries, 40 plus countries that we have. And in each country, we have at least one distribution center. Then depending on size, it could be even more than that. And then basically from there, we just distribute to final customers.
And on the last mile side of things, Davide, do you have a set kind of scope of carriers that you work with, or do you decide that country by country?
We do have some, as we call them, either regional or global partners that we want to basically interact with and do business with. And we normally lead more global and regional strategies. And that's mainly really for few partners, I would say 2-3 that we have. Then obviously the big part in each market is always national carrier post. So that's difficult to more manage it at above the market level. And this is mainly for the standard delivery. So standard for us is next day delivery, majority of our parcels. Then when it comes really to more tactical deliveries, like same day, 2 hours delivery, we go more market by market for smaller players that sometimes are more suitable than the big players to do those type of deliveries.
Very cool. Yeah, and I know you work with pretty innovative solutions. If I remember correctly, in Australia, you even piloted a 3-hour delivery. Can you share a little bit more about that with us?
Yeah, definitely. So, I would say that's really part of a bigger project that is Ship from Store. So we basically kicked off that in 2017 in several markets. So how could we use our boutique network, our offline network of retail, and be closer to consumers in order to increase accessibility, to avoid out of stock. And we've been running that for a couple of years with, I would say probably before, more failures than success, if I have to be honest. But with COVID, it accelerated a big deal. Why? Because with COVID, we'll talk probably a little bit more about that, but we start closing our stores in all the country. We started transforming them into dark stores. So that was a huge shift also for the retail community. Now I started to understand, okay, so we can use those actually to ship. And then the only neat thing we need to do is whenever we have customers back in our stores, we just need to continue serve our customers and plus also serving this type of services like ship from store. So Australia was an amazing, I would say, journey this year that we had and experience, and especially results, because they were really able to not only do it from a couple of boutiques, but they use 100% of their retail network, which is 19 boutiques, to using precisely these 3 hours delivery. And I think the beauty of this project, like many others that then we'll talk about in delivery services, is that delivery service alone cannot do much. And they always need all the other functions. They need the retail, they need the e-commerce, they need marketing, they need CRM, they need finance. So I think these type of projects for me are really great in a company to start breaking silos and to help really markets and business to come together.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's what we're hearing across a lot of e-commerce players. And I think everyone now is very keen to kind of refunction the stores to really cater to customer demands and also get the products out, right? I can imagine in times of COVID, also your volumes, e-commerce volumes must have spiked. Can you talk a little bit on the mix of e-commerce versus retail in your volumes?
Yeah, it just swapped basically from after COVID, from what it was before, retail versus versus digital. It accelerated tremendously what we were trying to do, not only in terms of volume, but also in terms of initiatives, in terms of focus. Yeah. That we had in digital overall and in last mile. We just recently released our brand new global business strategy for the next 5 years. And obviously digitalization and services is a huge part of where Nespresso will go. So yeah.
Fantastic. And yeah, you just said there's usually global strategies, right? So how do you go about implementing new projects? Is it a strategy where you test it in a market, like the one that you mentioned in Australia? Or how do you usually make sure that you drive innovation and that it works in the end?
Yeah, so I think overall, really, the main objective that we have in the global delivery service strategy is to make sure to offer our customers with relevant and optimal delivery service experience, and then obviously ensuring high quality standard while keeping the cost under control. So in this sentence, for us, there are a lot of interesting things like relevancy. So making sure that once we do something, it's relevant for customer, optimal delivery service experience. So we really take from A to Z the customer journey and how delivery service can embed it in this customer experience to make it much better. And quality, you can do all the fancy innovation. If you're going to be late, if you're going to deliver a broken package, customer are going to complain. And obviously cost is also a huge part, because we right now, obviously what happened, spike on last mile, the cost was increasing, but at the same time we need to manage that. So that's really for us the where do we come from. Then the way we operate, we have our HQ where I'm part of, where basically I normally run the new concept. So I take projects, new ideas that I have until a certain point. So until at least we have 2-3 markets, right? And then afterwards we have another team of people that are based in Lisbon that where basically we hand over a project at one point where we feel they are at the state of good maturity, and then they can do the industrialization. Mm-hmm. So that's been basically the case for these ship from store that we're talking about. It's yeah. been the case for other projects, like we've been working together with your company Track and Trace, where yeah. now we are more in a rollout phase. We have some other projects that I think are very interesting, like it's a program that we created that is called Delivery Service Portfolio Optimization Program, which is basically has the ambition to design really again the most relevant and optimal delivery experience for our customers. So we basically go from a diagnostic phase that we collect all data, all inputs from customers, we do surveys, we do benchmarks, we see ourselves, and then afterwards we see how we can transform all those insights into output in a workshop. So to give you an example, it could be that we say, you know what, we are very good in speed, but customers don't know about it. So we need to put much more marketing emphasis into that. Or we understand that the threshold, free delivery threshold is really a barrier for our customers. So we need to do something with our price strategy. And yeah. then basically we work on that. And that was another program that basically initiated a year ago and then handed over to the team in Lisbon. And that's basically how we go about it. We pilot things and then we, when they work, we try to accelerate it with the team as much as possible.
Very cool. And yeah, you mentioned already the ship to store. Any other outlook or insight you can give us on the exciting projects that you have at hand for the year or maybe also for the years to come?
Yeah, I think this one that we mentioned, the ship from store is one. Obviously, increasing click and collect, not only with Pudos, but also with our own network is another thing. And Australia did that very well. So they didn't just stop themselves to say, okay, we do ship from store, but it was also the now called BOPIS, you know, buy online, pick up in store, that they start doing it. So we're also doing a lot of that. Track and Trace, as you know, with you, it's another huge project that we are doing because control and visibility, it's really one of the most, I would say, common human needs that we all have. We want to know what's happening. We want to control things, and that's the same for our deliveries. We also did something pretty cool this year that I like very much, especially being from a quarter that sometimes we're a little bit you know, far away from operation. We pilot in partnership with our Swiss market and DPD, which is our main carrier in the Swiss market, a lean value stream exercise, which basically had the aim really to improve ultimately the customer experience for Swiss consumers. And what that meant is really that we went from A to Z to the whole end-to-end lean value stream, basically of from when order comes to when we deliver. We did also follow Hopon in a van and did a one day of delivery, delivering an espresso customer, but also other customers. And I think that was an eye opener because first of all, you empathize much more with a job that is very difficult. And people say, you know, what does it take to ship something from A to B? It's very difficult. There are a lot of challenges. It's a tough job. There are a lot of things going wrong. There are customers that are not easy to reach. So, and I think over there, it was really nice opener even because we saw there were in the last mile so many things that can be improved, so many things that go wrong, but also it's very difficult to control those things. So this is one thing that, for example, we piloted last year. We plan to do it this year in other markets like Belgium, Portugal. And I think it's a new way to strengthen partnership with the carriers and but also to raise a little bit awareness on, you know, what's really going on behind the scene, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think a lot of the e-commerce merchants now are seeing quite a few challenges also with redeliveries, right? Customers not being at home, accepting the orders, and also returns. Can you talk to us a little bit what you're experiencing there?
Yeah, I think the first time right is one of the biggest challenges because customers, right now, these periods, we all know that we are more home and probably we will stay a little bit more home, you know, with this working from home situation that will probably become more normal. But still, people will have to be, you know, outside of their apartments. So I believe that there are a few things that we want to experiment and we believe it's cool precisely for this, to increase the first time right, because obviously it's a matter of cost, it's a matter of sustainability and less CO2 emissions, it's a matter of customer experience that we want to give in the end. So there are some technologies like, I don't know, the Amazon key that they, you know, try. So being able to deliver your apartment even when you're over there and enter your apartment and you know, put your coffee in your apartment over there or in the trunk of your car. That's for me, it does increase. It's technology that enabled that time of the type of thing like first time ride.
Some do you feel like customers are open to do that? Did you have the chance to kind of do some first feedback?
I think we didn't really run a survey on asking them if they are. I think, again, it goes back to basic human needs of control, transparency, visibility. If you give them the possibility to control it, to check it, I don't see why not. And if you have that trust and you build that trust, especially with a brand like ours, where we did that a very good job, I don't see why not. Probably it won't be for everyone, but I think you will always have the early adapters and then afterwards people following that. Other cool technology, I think, company that doing these Web3 boards that they do. So basically they're able to geolocalize exactly where precisely you're going to go and deliver your parcel, especially in Switzerland, where sometimes we have some instances where it's difficult to find the apartment, or probably customers wants to have the parcel left in the back door, which is difficult to find and so on. I think also those technology we are planning to pilot and to trial some of those this year. So those I think are the ones that are helping us a little bit probably to increase the first time right then.
Thank you for sharing, David. Very interesting. And I'm sure a lot of e-commerce merchants right now have similar challenges. Having boutiques at hand that can also function as a shipping location and a collect location is, of course, very helpful, especially also in these times to just cast the net a little bit wider. David, you're also in a global role. And of course, as we all know, every country has its own quirks. There's countries in Asia, which I know also quite well. They don't even have postal codes. And I'm sure also customer behavior is very different. Can you share a little bit with us on maybe the astonishing things you came across from the different countries and different customer behaviors that Nespresso has to cater to?
Yes. So first of all, let me tell you, we are running right now a lot of last mile customer service survey in many countries. And the idea is really, we want to understand much better what customers value for Nespresso. We often go out there and get, a McKinsey study here, another study there, which is great. But at the end of the day, we say, okay, what our customers are really thinking about our last mile. And we've been doing this for several countries, going from Brazil to Nordics, Italy to Asia and so on and so forth. I have to say that, first of all, for me, there are some cluster of needs that are the same for all human beings. It doesn't matter if you are in Taiwan, in Italy, or in Germany, or in Australia. So when it comes to transparency, need of transparency, need of being in control, we all have it as a human beings in general. We like to know how things are going and basically control stuff. So I think that for me is a basic one. And track and trace is precisely something that doesn't matter if you ask to someone in Taiwan or in Berlin, they all want the same. Similarly, convenience and reliability, it's all something they want. We want to know exactly when parcel arrives. We want to make sure that it does arrive at that time. We want to be able to have the schedule delivered. So also that is the same. Then what it may vary is probably the time of the delivery. In Switzerland, if you go and deliver at 9, 10 o'clock in the evening, they're going to probably be very upset about it. But if you do it in other countries like in New York and London, it might be cool. So I think that that's a little bit some of the difference. And then you have it also in terms of flexibility. Flexibility, I think, for me, is another huge need that we have, again, as human needs. And then it changes, no? So it might be that for someone, the flexibility in one country means something different for someone else. So rerouting the parcel, I think it's a one way to give flexibility. Having different threshold for free delivery, that's another way to give flexibility, you see? Yeah. So those then I think it becomes from country to country. But the main differences we see also is urban area versus rural areas, right? So it doesn't matter if it's São Paulo, Milan, in the really urban areas, we see that they want things fast, that they have less tolerance for waiting to receive their parcels versus someone that is normally more, obviously, towards living more outside of urban areas. So, and then obviously we see differences in, I don't know, Brazil, poodles are not going very much and they're not really super wanted. And one of the main reasons why we saw is because most of the basically home deliveries that we have and you know, buildings, they all have a sort of concierge 24/7. So they don't see much of a reason of going on there. So there are some of those differences that we have now from country to country.
Very interesting. Thanks for also sharing that. I think obviously one of the things that always needs to check out for you is you understand what your customers need in terms of solution, but you always also need to find a provider that gives you that solution for your customers. So how do you feel about, you know, the carriers these days catching up with the increasing demands of your end consumers? Or is there like a wish list of features that you feel are not yet fulfilled, but we should probably look at them, okay? Should rush to implement them for brands like Nespresso?
So I think it's what's happening, what happened last year is very difficult to manage and to overall for everyone. So I think it's too easy, and we see it as a citizen of countries to blame you know, politicians for what they're doing. We see it as you know, you being obviously founder of your company, maybe employee. It's difficult to point fingers, but I think the reality is that it was very, very difficult and tough. And also on our side, I think I always say that even if you put people in the best, you know, MBA and ask, you know, and give the most difficult business case to say, imagine that there is a pandemic, you know, and you cannot really go outside and you need to keep this. I mean, it would be probably one of the most difficult, right, business case that people have to deal with, and most unrealistic, and still it did happen. So I think as a context for me, it's very difficult to say, you know, what they should be doing. What they've done, I think it was very good, and they just should be doing that. So all those services that they continue to do in terms of reliability, starting from improving the track and trace, starting from actually improving the in-flight option for customers to understand exactly how they can change it. I think it's all things that they need to do. Increasing their capacity, it's something that they're doing. They cannot do from one day to another one. They cannot add hubs, sorting center overnight. So I think those are things that they're doing. But overall, I think what we need to see and what we need to change and what is changing is how we see last mile, really the perception that we have. It's not anymore changing, you know, shipping something from A to B, but it is really a key component of the overall digital journey, and that really brings a lot of satisfaction and brand loyalty in the long run. Yeah. So what we do when we choose our partner right now is really, first of all, can they offer what our customers really value the most? Are we really in line with what we care about? Values, obviously our sustainability pledge, which is big like many other companies. Are they able to provide a good quality at a fair price? And then obviously it can change slightly depending on the market context, whether you have more monopoly in one than another one, context historically, you know, COVID versus no COVID, standard delivery versus same day, 2 hours. Those are the differences. But overall, those are the things that we look at when we go and partner with carriers. And yes.
Fantastic. You mentioned also times of COVID already, obviously bringing a full hand of new challenges to every business. Can you share a little bit, your challenges with COVID and maybe also the good outcomes, the good changes that it brought to the business on your end?
I think challenges with COVID were very much same challenges that most of our brands were having. So product availability, capacity, and on-time delivery, meaning customer satisfaction. So I think the way we tackle it, we were all super positively surprised. Not because we were not, obviously, we don't know that we can handle challenges, but that just because this one, again, was something that we never conceived as human beings. So we didn't even ever cross our mind. So it was not really something we had as a reference point. But I think there were two main things that we did it as a company very good. One was more on organizational side, so people-wise. We created a lot of task force. They basically broke all the silos that we had. So basically we had an omnichannel task force and many others. I was part of the omnichannel where we had e-commerce, customer relationship center, retail, finance, quality, supply chain. And from morning to evening, we were having small updates to say, okay, what is that we need to do for the day? What is that we need to accomplish for the week? And that was a huge game changer in how we were communicating. So I think that that was one big thing from reorganization wise. We had easier access to board members and decision-making process was done much easier. And I think that was also something that helped a lot. And then I think what happened with the recovery that we'll never have in our life anymore is we all had the same common enemy, right? It doesn't matter, you know, which objective I had in my objective plan, what you had, didn't matter my gender, didn't matter, you know, my hierarchy. We all had the same enemy to fight against. And that really gave a huge energy for the whole company to really have something to fight against. So I think that was the first part, really big one, how we react. The second one was really from a supply chain perspective. We had to reduce our SKUs to be more focused. We had obviously to shut down some production line to make sure that we had all the safety measures in place. So that was one thing. And we had to do all thing possible, obviously, to ensure as much as possible product availability. So that was one thing. In terms of capacity, well, we add obviously additional shift. We had to make sure that all the safe and health, type of measures were in place. And then what we did, not only add additional shift, we start using our boutique as dark stores, as I said before. And then another very creative things that we had, and we basically understood that with COVID, we could do things that we asked, you know, probably, you know, other colleagues or other functions to do in many years, was we start using some of our distribution centers in some of our countries to also support other countries where they were in a basically shortage of capacity. So, for example, in Switzerland, we have a huge distribution center, which is also automated, so it can go more 24/7. And from there, we start supporting Portugal when needed, UK when needed, Germany when needed, even Canada we went on. So that I think was another thing that we did for really shifting overall the capacity. And then the last part was in last mile. So we had to change customer promise. We normally have next day. We normally have same day in most of the markets. So we start obviously changing in the period 5 to 7 days, 7 to 10 days. And we start to communicating to customers more that. And so that they knew that basically changed.
How did customer react to that?
But I think very well. In a sense, again, we go back to understanding, to transparency, to communication. We all knew that we were living in unprecedented times. So I think they empathize a lot with that. I think what they pretend, and I think they did very well, is pretend that at least we were able to react accordingly and tell them the things were changing, communicate accordingly, right? So in most of the countries, they were locked down. So they knew they couldn't go out and they probably imagined they also carriers couldn't really come in some places. But as long as you tell them, as long as you are, you know, transparent about that, I think that actually creates a lot of loyalty in the end.
Yeah, fantastic. No, I think, turning this around and using it as an opportunity to unify the teams and drive some innovative new projects is fantastic. I think well done. You also just briefly mentioned UK, and of course, you know, times of COVID were challenging enough, but now we have the Brexit. Does that at all affect your business? How are you dealing with that one?
It will. We had obviously that news over Christmas when we were all enjoying our Christmas, and we had a little bit to see whether we had enough basically stock in the market to do it. And so far, it was the case. I think also over there we followed very closely, so we were probably overstocking a little bit market to make sure that if it did happen from one day to another, like it did in the end, we were ready to react to it. And so yes, I would say no major concern, considering that we all have, as I said, at least one distribution center in each market. So I think we're well covered with that.
Are you planning to extend the range of distribution centers, or you think one per market is basically the way to go and you're just growing with markets going forward?
No, I think it's at least one per market. In some markets we have more, but we constantly do what we call distribution network redesign every 2 years. Normally also when we do tenders for warehousing, we always see if based on how our customer the basically base is growing and based on, you know, how the volumes are going and how the country is evolving, if where we currently have distribution center is the best location. And if it's not, basically we change it or we add warehouses. Especially also right now, you see that we have in our product range in coffee, but we also have accessories, we also have machines, but we know obviously the coffee is really the things consumers consume the most, first of all, and also that where they ran out of stock, where they wanted product available faster. So we also start thinking about having more micro fulfillment centers and you know, in small areas where we have more customer base without really having a huge warehouse, and having more sometimes huge warehouses automated to ship and to handle all the SKUs, and leaving some of the SKUs that are the fast running SKUs closer really to where the consumers are. So that's also something that we are seeing, you know, moving forward to change the strategy to be more accessible.
No, and when we talk about timing, there's obviously, you know, we didn't manage to do a lot of conferences, whereas usually, you know, you see a lot of innovative technologies. What do you feel it's time to implement for your business? Or is there a certain technology that you're particularly looking forward to? A lot of people talk about automation, robots in your warehouse. We talk about machine learning, Internet of Things, any particular technology that you're particularly keen on or that you hope will accelerate further in the coming years?
I think what we see is the same thing that you see when we go to these exhibitions and everyone else. So the one you just mentioned, I think are exactly the same. So I wouldn't say that we see something different than anyone else. I think some of the things that right now are really on the plate, and that are also for us probably a little bit more closer and easier to implement in the next few years than really long run, is robotics and automation, especially in warehousing, where we are already trialing some of those. What we discussed before, which is also technologies that can help us to increase first time right, whether it's going to be technology like we said, what Rewards does, Amazon Keys, those are things that we see them being closer to us in the sense that we can already implement it and trial it. Systems-wise, we have a few things that obviously we're doing, not only track and trace, exploring OMS, TMS enhancing. So all those things are technology that will help us to be more agile. And and then finally, also, we speak a lot about autonomous vehicles nowadays. After I did that Hop-On POV tour with DPD and the project that we did in Switzerland, the Limbo Stream, I realized how impossible it is in the next 5-10 years to deliver, at least in most of our areas, with autonomous vehicles, our customers. It's just very, very difficult. However, I think for first mile, middle mile, it can be something very interesting. So I have in mind to trial some of that in perhaps how we replenish our boutiques, or how we go between our distribution center to the first hub of the carrier. So I think for those type of routes can be definitely something that we'll trial. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, we're all going to watch out and see what innovations come to us and maybe to our doorstep in the future. Thank you so much for the insights on the Nespresso and your role there and the trends that you're seeing. At the same time, Davida, I also know you've been in the logistics industry for such a long time, and maybe some of our listeners are wondering, what is it that excites you and me equally about logistics? Maybe if you don't mind, share a little bit, how did you end up in this industry and what is it that fascinates you?
Yeah. Whoa. So how did I end up here? I would say it's not probably because when I was a kid, I loved to be, you know, a logistics specialist or anything like that. It just happened really to be, I think, two main things. One is a family business. We also had them as part of it, basically a huge warehouse that we're using for family business. So I ended up being over there and helping quite a few times. So I think that had a role to get me a little bit interested into that. Secondly, I think town where I'm coming from is Genoa in north of Italy. It's a town in on a harbor. And then basically that's how I ended up doing my major. So it was economy and logistics, transportation and shipping. So that's basically how I got started. Nothing really too exciting, nothing really, I would say, too conscious. But going basically then after years, I think it's super exciting because at the end of the day, if you're a person that really are bored with routines, logistics is not a routine. You always have something different, something that pops up last minute. You need to have a very, very good problem solving, good analytical skills. And then if you move even right now more to delivery services, which for me is an evolvement of logistics, you don't only need to have those skills, but it becomes really more also of a marketing tool. So you need to understand what customers want. So there is a lot of understanding behavior of people, of customers. How can you use that? How can you make that appealing for customers? How can you really sell it? So it transformed really more the, I think, you know, regional logistics that we all know into something a little bit more fancy, a little bit more marketing type-ish thing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, I couldn't agree more. Logistics can be a fantastic opportunity to build customer loyalty, excite them, get closer to your customer as well. For anyone listening that would love to maybe also start a career at Nespresso, work in logistics, any hints that you have, any things that for you are particularly important to be excited about a candidate maybe as well in logistics?
Yeah, but I think first of all is the main thing is to understand that the logistics that we are doing as all companies and that they do right now, direct to consumer business model, is a completely different beast than you know, the logistics that we all knew before. It was basically just replenishing you know, big supermarkets with huge pallets and, you know, just find efficiencies and nothing else. So there is much more that is changing. For me, it's a different type of logistics. It's a different, you know, completely skill set that you need. And you need to be obviously almost an entrepreneur in finding new solutions and being able to try new things and having really that, you know, attitude to, yeah, not only try, but be agile, be also okay with failing. So I think it's a lot of different things what we expect today in people in logistics than what we had before in the previous business models.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe to end off our podcast, I think what might not everyone know about you is that you're also a coach. And I have to admit, I've been following a little bit, not just your post on LinkedIn, but also a post that you just recently made on the coaching blog about time to set a meeting for yourself, which could maybe be a great New Year's resolution for all of our listeners. Do you want to share just a little bit about that idea and maybe also how it helped you?
Yeah, sure. First of all, on the coaching side, I think it started as a passion, and then which I took it more also as a profession. So it's this second hat that I have besides the, you know, global hat for Last Mile for Nespresso. And I have to say, first of all, he helped a great deal in not only in private life, but especially you were talking about business and especially in all those that people call soft skills that are not really soft, but overall emotional intelligence. I think it helps a lot. It helps, first of all, develop and coach people in the team that you have. I think it's a tremendous asset that we need to have, especially with the different generations that we're working right now. We don't, you know, we have really some huge gaps between people going from 23, 25 and 52. So I think that's a very good skill set that coaching can help you to coach, develop, to listen, to asking questions. I think the other one that can help very much is being at ease a little bit with failure, with challenges, how you cope with challenges, how you cope with stress, how you're able really to reframe things from what's happening. And that's a little bit what the article was about. And is we very much go from meeting to meeting to meeting, and we very rarely have the possibility to step back and to think a little bit, how are we growing as a professionals? What was one of the best achievements that we had? How can we capitalize on that? How can we grow our also self-confidence, no, based on that? What do we learn from some of the mistakes that we had? And I think, yeah, setting, and that's something in habit I picked, setting, you know, 2-3 hours on a Friday morning, once a month, and just looking back what you have done, and also what you want to do in the next few months. It's a good way to pause a little bit, to reflect, to grow as a professional, but also as a human being. So that's, I think it helps a great deal in overall how you manage how you manage business life.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. Davide, thank you so much for all these insights, not just on a professional level, but also a little bit on your personal career in the logistics industry. I think very exciting times ahead for all of us. Like you said, logistics is always changing and we are changing with that. And maybe, I want to end once more. Thank you for joining us today, for sharing your and the Nespresso story, and also for the great idea to our listeners. Take some time for yourself, either to reflect or maybe also listen to our podcast, which will now happen on a weekly basis. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Rob. Bye.
All right. That was the Logistics Tribe podcast episode with Davide Costella from Nespresso. I hope you enjoyed today's program. Please feel free to follow us or connect with us on LinkedIn. Links are in the show notes. Please remember to subscribe to the Logistics Tribe podcast so you don't miss any of the future episodes. I'm Boris Felgendreher. Until next time.